Okay, I just wanted to welcome everybody and those of you who are here live and those of you who will be joining us by listening to the recording. And I'm going to turn you over to Steph and Maureen. Maureen is in her usual place in Georgia, awaiting the arrival of her new grandbaby. And Steph is in Mexico today, so he's the world traveler. Mm. So I'll hand it over to you guys. Take it away.
Okay. Hello. Hello, everybody. Welcome to week three now, I guess, isn't it? It seems to be going so quickly for me. But I loved Michael's video. I remembered it from the first time round. And I love the factory default settings for life are... We are within our own innate well-being, our own innate mental health all the time. The only thing that stops us from being aware of that is what's going on in our head. So I love the Michael's explanation about his behavioural Prozac. I did the same thing. Some years ago, I got into meditation and I got into all sorts of practices, including, you know, sort of running and things like that. And I felt that there was a time when I felt that I got into such a routine with it that what I used to do is I used to meditate around what was going to happen during the day. If I had a meeting, then I would meditate around the meeting being successful and people liking me and being able to get the order if that's what it was about. And then what I found was that if for some reason I didn't meditate that morning, I used to have such a bad experience of that day because I used to think everything was going to go wrong. And I automatically used to think everything would go wrong if I didn't do something to sort it out. And I remember one of the very first insights I had around the connection, and this was something else that I really loved in Michael's book, when he said, we don't need to learn to open our heart or connect with others because that just happens when we don't stop it from happening. I never knew that. I never knew that up until probably about 6 months of being into learning the principles. So one day I had an insight where I woke up and I realized, I didn't really know what it meant, but I heard the words that the connection is in you. The connection is always in you. And so I looked into that a little bit deeper. And I realized that I only ever felt that I was connected to people when I was doing two things. One was when I was playing the drums as a musician. Another was when I was coaching people. Everything else in my life always felt as though it was really hard work. And I realized that what I had been doing was I would be showing up to people in meetings or in social circumstances, parties or whatever, meeting people. And I would have an incredible amount of thinking going on. I would have such a dialogue in my head about, okay, so what does this person want to hear? Will they like me? Will they be able to understand what I say? So it made every engagement that I had in those circumstances it made those really, really difficult for me. So what I used to do, especially with businesses, was I used to make sure I had a PowerPoint presentation, I would have a video, or I'd have something that would allow me to present myself in the best way without having to talk. And when I actually understood that it was that dialogue that was going on in my head that was preventing me from actually connecting with the people that I was speaking to, that was like a lightning bolt for me. It was such a revelation that I immediately decided to go out and test the theory. So I would not meditate in the morning. I would go out to a business meeting, a presentation, and I would, instead of taking, I'd have my PowerPoint presentation in the background, but instead of immediately showing it and then just talking around it, what I'd do is I would get really quiet and I would listen. And I would try to listen. I would not pay attention to the dialogue that was happening in my head. And something really magical seemed to happen, in as much as I realized that people actually like to be listened to. You know, people actually like to be, they like to feel that what they're saying is of importance. That was a revelation to me, because I was used to jump in. I was used to try and make points, and I was used to have an idea of how I wanted things to go. But when I realized that the connection is in me, and all the noise was preventing me from connecting to people, preventing me from experiencing the connection that was already there, things really changed. You know, those presentations got so much easier. People were really appreciative of the fact that I wasn't trying to give them an agenda, or I wasn't trying to be liked. I was actually listening to what they were saying, and I was responding to what they were saying. And that process carried on for quite some time after I began testing it out on that. I began talking to friends like that, or not talking to friends. I actually listened, you know, and going to parties, and it got to the point where I would be sitting in a cab with a cab driver, and I would be really quiet and I would listen, and over a course of time the cab driver would tell me his life story. He would tell me everything that was important to him about his life and his family. And this started happening in cabs, it started happening in supermarkets. All of a sudden, people, because I didn't have anything preventing the connection, because I wasn't paying attention to the dialogue in my head, people naturally felt at ease with being able to talk about things that were important to them. And that was the essence of connection for me. So I have to say that's probably one of the biggest revelations that I've had, biggest insights that I've had, and the most helpful, because it pretty much changed my relationship with everybody. And it's so much of a relief to not have everything about me, you know, not for me, not to be the one that needs to be liked, or the one that needs to be impressive and competent. No. So in summary, that was my big insight. I think that knowing that connection is already there, regardless with everybody makes life so much easier. Life flows a lot more easily. Relationships are much better. Business is better. Thank you.
Can you hear me, Sarah? Okay. I was trying to mute myself because I don't have headphones. I didn't know if the noise was echoing.
When you do that, I don't think you can unmute yourself. So that's why I keep unmuting you.
Okay. Well, I was muting. I muted it so I didn't want Steph to be echoing through. That was beautiful, Steph. I remember feeling that way too. And really towards the end of what you were saying, to me, it really brings back like a timeless. Things feel timeless. And what I mean by that is kind of like when we are out now and I'm with clients, I try not to be like, okay, we've got an hour and I have to be somewhere. Like I could be out a minute late, Sarah, for the program. But it's just kind of like, because you're just being with them. And I don't want anyone else feeling that I have somewhere else I need to be or somebody else is more important than being with them. And I've even noticed that the other day when I was spending some time with my grandson over the weekend, he's four, the youngest one's four, and he loves being around me and he just talks and we walk around the yard. And a lot of times I don't say anything. Most of the day I don't say anything. But he has that space where he can just talk about everything. He can be playing and I just sit there. You don't really even have to engage. Whereas before, years ago, you used to thought you had to strike a conversation, see where they're at, question them. And now it's so beautiful just the watching and see what comes up. Because even now when I watch him play, I mean, he comes up with some things, just some wild stuff. I mean, just, it's pure. It's just really, and it's not directed by me and my questions or anything like that. He gets to be himself. But when I watched the video, of course it talked about the birth and we are expecting our second, not my daughter's second, it'll be our sixth grandchild is getting ready to be born within the next week or two. And, but it brought me back to years ago when I had my second baby that died during delivery. She passed during delivery. And I thought, I'll never, ever be happy again. I mean, it was such an overwhelming, because the room's decorated, her name, you know, everything. You're so prepared for everything except that. And when that happened, I thought I would never be happy again. And when we went to, and I think some of y'all might have heard the story before, but when we went to the cemetery for the funeral, my in-laws were driving, my husband and I, and my father-in-law kind of drove off the side road and parked partially like where the graves are supposed to be. And my mother-in-law got so angry with him and she starts hollering at him. And he's calling her names, and they're calling each other names. And my husband and I are sitting in the back seat, and we kind of just looked at each other and just busted out laughing because they were so ridiculous. It's like, this is such a time, but instead of getting caught up in the emotions of what we were going through about the baby, those two fighting just seemed so ridiculous. And so we just busted out laughing. And then I looked, and my husband, I said, oh my gosh, we can't get out of the car. We're laughing. Everybody expects us to be sad, you know? But I knew at that moment, that was the universal way of saying, you'll be happy again. It's okay. Just go through. It's just something we're having to go through. It's an emotion. It was just a process of life that we were going through. And that was really cool for me, especially when I got into the principles, because I really thought back at that moment, like when everything kind of clicked, I was like, oh, all those kind of moments, like it was a knowing, call it a knowing, that you knew there was something more there. And no matter what, it always brings you back. It brings you back inside. It brings you back to who you really are. And when we were, last week I was at the IP, Infinite Potential, Infinite Possibilities. Is that right, Sarah? Yeah. So used to saying the initials, I don't know what they stand for. But we were with Michael in California. There were, I think, five of us in that were there live in the group. And it was really a great experience. If anybody ever gets, if he offers this again, it was a beautiful, it's a six-month program, maybe? Is that right, Sarah?
That's correct. We've changed it a little bit. But anyway, go ahead.
But while we were there, I kind of got caught up in my head. And actually, it went back to Michael brought up the word. We talked about enlightened. Well, I kind of got up in my head about that. The word. And it's kind of like what I told you last week about when Steph talked about consciousness that time. And I went into my head like, oh my God, there's different levels of consciousness. But it was the same thing when it came to enlightened. What Michael thought enlightenment meant and the way I saw enlightenment were two different things. And I got caught up in my head on it. But the thing is, the cool thing was, at the moment, I mean, I felt myself just spiral. And really for about an hour, I was just not in a good place. But then as it quiets down, you go back and you're able to find that space in here, go back in. And it's like, oh, it's okay. Because everybody is the same as that word. And then I really thought, well, maybe I just don't even know what the word means. Maybe I need to look it up. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, I don't need to look it up. Because what it means for me, I feel good about. And the way Michael sees it, and somebody else, or and everybody. And it's that about everything. That everything is different when you can, I call it step back, go inside. And I used with Michael the analogy with the group last week. I had read it in the book. I think it was Anita Morjani's book, The Dying to Be Me, where she, when she passed, she used the thing of it was a warehouse, an expanding warehouse. There's so much, and it's all connected. Everything in there is connected, and it just goes on. But all we see is where the flashlight is. Well, for me, and she gives them that flashlight can expand. And so for me, like when I get caught up in like what happened last week about the word, I mean, we get caught up with work. We get caught up about family, anything. To me, you're holding the flashlight closer, which makes it smaller. But then if you step back, pull back from it, and pull back from it, and go back in here, it expands. And then it just feels more like oneness. And when you come back to that part where there's nothing but pure love and who you are, and I kind of think that's what Michael was reflecting in the video, is we always go back to that home base. That's what we all have, not just certain people. Everything has that. Even animals, I mean, plants, I think they all have that center part. We all have that part that's one, that's all interconnected. And when you go back in there, there's nothing wrong. And it's just nice knowing that place is there when you do get lost, I can just sink back into it. And sometimes it's a little harder to find your way. And you know, when you're lost, it's like, what am I doing? I know this doesn't feel right. But when, and that's a signal. Those feelings are our signals that we're off and that we need to go another direction. So when you're feeling the fear and the awkwardness and the insecurities that come up, that's just my sign of going, oh, I'm going the wrong direction. I need to turn around and go back the other way. Because when you're coming from what's in, you're never lost. Because it's always there. It's always love. Everything is pure. And it's when you go this way that you're looking on the outside that things start looking, I call them more insecurities and fear, and everything arises from that. But and what Steph said a minute ago about everybody has a story, that is, I love that. I love now going traveling and getting in the cab because they had the best stories. Too bad HBO made that show Taxi Cab Confessions kind of raunchy, but because everybody, those cab drivers have some beautiful, beautiful stories to tell. I mean, everybody has a story to tell. And that's really why Steph and I and Sarah are here for this program, is really to hear other people's stories of how they see things inside or outside. And hopefully we can help guide you back to looking back from an inside view instead of the outside view. So, share.
Beautiful. Yeah, so let's just invite everybody to raise your hand, and I'm going to go over the instructions, even though many of you know this. If you'd like to join us and speak, please click on the participant feature, and a page will open up, and there's a thing at the bottom that says raise hand. And Rex has already found his way there. And before you go, Rex, I just want to say, Ashley Albright, I got you. So if you want to text me, I'm happy to bring you on. Okay, so Rex, you're good to go.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Sarah. I was sort of listening to the descriptions, and my experience is a bit different in that I feel that my place of love, my place of luxury and love, is actually hidden, because as my growing up experience was that I kind of hid from myself, and that when I try and access that place, I just feel a real tension in my chest and a real fear. So I feel like I've got to get past or through that somewhere. It's this fear response is the one that's most deeply ingrained. And I get logically all the ideas that it's a thought, that it's a, I'm just a thought away. And I've tried thinking, ooh, happy place, but I'm not getting there. There are places, much as Steph described, that I associate with that. But it's still a case of going through a process and through a series of steps to get beyond to that. And it does feel like pushing through a barrier.
Yeah, Rex, last week when that was happening at the IP, I could feel myself, like, I always call it putting the brick wall up around me. Yeah. To protect me. Yeah. Years ago, I can remember, being told, you should have sued the Catholic school system for your lack of education, and, you'll never be good enough. You hear those things, but and to me, they kind of stacked the wall up around me to protect myself so I couldn't get hurt. Yeah. And it's just a wash, is all I can say, Rex. It comes in time that all of a sudden those blocks just fall down. And like last week, they came down quicker. But I did, because I felt like I was different last week. When Michael started that conversation, I felt like I wasn't a part of it. I felt like I was wrong, or I wasn't seeing things right. But what I've seen is that went back to the truth thing. What's true for me isn't true for someone else. And everybody, it's like politics. Everybody has a different opinion. And in the big scheme of things, it really doesn't matter. They really can't change anything about you. It's all in us. It's all our feelings. So those feelings, when I feel that scare, it's just trying to go back and just find really who I am. And I think that's when I get like that, I'm trying not to be who I really am. I'm trying to be who somebody else wants me to be. Yeah. But when I really just go back to being just me, don't care what anyone else thinks, then that makes me shine more and show more love for myself. In order for me to love myself, the other people feel it, and then they become more open also.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Rex.
Beautiful. So we go on? We've got a bunch of hands.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Let's go to our friend Linda Harvey. And then we're going to go, after Linda, we're going to go to Sean. So Linda Harvey, you're on.
Hi, everyone. Can you hear me?
Hi, Linda.
Hi.
Linda.
Hi. When I watched the video, I was struggling with the default settings. I could see, yes, that would be the place to go to, but I'd got so much stuff that it'd be like digging my way to Australia with a boom. And then Steph said something today, and I wanted to jump out of my chair because I thought, oh my God, it is all thought. And the thing that you said, Steph, was you mentioned running as part of the things that you used to do. And a good few years ago, I was doing some NLP training, and I'd read this thing, and it said, if you get 3 yeses, you've got more buy-in. And I read this advert in the paper, and it said, are you a woman? Yes. Are you over 50? Yes. Would you like to run a marathon? I thought, well, yes, I would. And everybody's sort of absolutely hilarious at this because, you know, kids say, my God, Mum, you take the car up to the shop and it's 200 yards. You know, you've never run for a bus. What do you think you're doing? And I said, well, I'm going to go along. And I did. I did all the training. Come to marathon day. It's the red hottest day of the year. Kids are phoning me up saying, you don't have to do it, Mum. You don't have to do it. You know, you're part vampire. You never go out in the sun. It'll burn you. No, I'm fine. I'm going to do it. And I finished my marathon.
Oh, well done. Well done.
And then a few months ago, I thought, I might try that running again because I really had a good time. Well, I couldn't even... I've got my little watch on and it said, you know, sort of run a minute and walk for 2, and I'm running for what felt like half an hour, and I looked at the watch and it was 15 seconds. I'm thinking, oh my God, how did I run a marathon? But it's just thought. In the first one, I just went along. I had no idea if I was ever going to run a marathon, but every training session I went to and I'd get through it, I think, oh, do you know, I can do this. And then all of a sudden, I'm thinking, I can't do it. And it was just, oh my God.
That is awesome, Linda, when you say, I just realized it's all thought. That is so big. That is so big. And I was thinking about my own journey as you were talking, and about Rex's journey as well. And I was thinking about I suppose it was, for me, the understanding became incremental And it was after hearing something like Michael's video and then kind of testing it out, you know, in my own thinking and then seeing it in other people. And then the more that I saw it, the more insights I had around it, the more I trusted it. And I was thinking about one defining moment for me when I realized the fact of thought was when my sort of background is I looked after my son for a long time when me and my wife split up, and then I looked after my dad until he passed. So I had lots and lots to do all the time, lots of responsibilities. And then one day my son went to university and my dad died. So all of a sudden I had none of this stuff to do. And I remember getting on a plane thinking, I'm really happy. I'm on a plane. I'm going somewhere. I'm going to get to do some work. And then the thought came in, so why are you so happy? Then the thought came in, actually, you know, you shouldn't be happy. The reason you're happy is that you've got nothing to go home for. And then I just caught it. I began, as Maureen was saying, in her, you know, when we get that feeling, it's an indication that we're looking in the wrong direction. That we're not aware of our thinking, and we're not in that place of home. It's just a signal to say we're off. And for me, in that moment, I saw that I was getting afraid of that thinking. I was getting afraid of that experience. What had been a really happy start, I'd managed to turn in the space of 5 minutes into, oh my God, where is this going? And what changed it for me was that I saw what was happening. I could see the thinking that had created the feeling. And the feeling was it felt real, it felt really powerful. But as soon as I saw it, as soon as I got a glimpse of, well, this is just thought doing its thing. This is the way it works. This is the fact of thought. As you were saying, it's all thought. As soon as I saw that, I popped out of it. I went back to that default position of happiness. I was happy. I was glad to be going. And I felt like I dodged a bullet, but for me, that was a defining moment, because it was that moment that I saw what was going on underneath the bonnet. I could see how my mind was, my thoughts were creating my experience in that moment. So for me, you know, for you to say it's all thought is it's gorgeous to hear. It really is. And for Rex, you know, just keep, you know, for me, it was a process of just testing it, seeing, looking out, looking in the direction, seeing what's happening underneath the bonnet all the time, and gradually it becomes a part of you. I mean, we'll get lost at times. I still get quite lost. Sometimes I don't see what's happening. Sometimes I don't recognize the feeling. But it doesn't last as long, and it doesn't go quite as deep. So thank you.
Okay, let's see. Let's go now. Who did I say? I said Sean. And after Sean, we have Simon. Okay, Sean, you're up.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Good. Something that keeps coming back around for me is basically my background is sports coaching and kind of working with people who are going to go out and be coaches and work with kids and it kind of linked in with something that Maureen mentioned before when you were out with your grandkid and I'm involved in movement and teaching sort of athletes how to move and so on. And I see that as being this this inside out sort of, or outside in problem that we have from a coaching perspective, because instinctually kids know how to move. They know how to play. They can lose themselves for hours doing, you know, just this climbing trees and jumping on stuff and rolling around. And yet we break the system by saying, don't climb on that and don't roll on this and don't, you know, get your hands out of that and, you know, get your food out of your hair and say if you've got any. And it's, we spend years just completely clouding the sun, if you like, and putting layers between our own innate ability to move. And then as a result, we need sort of students like I teach to then have to go back and almost try and fix the problem, because we end up with people who go through life being told not to do stuff and how sometimes your instinct tells you that, you know, it is okay to run or it is okay to jump over this or climb a tree and so on. And then all of a sudden we have to go back and try and reverse it. And things like meditation and sort of all these interventions kind of appear that we need to then use to strip back the stuff that we've already kind of stuck on. It's like layers of wallpaper in a house, isn't it, where you've got a nice clean wall and then all of a sudden you start putting wallpaper on it. And to get back to that wall, you know, to get the authentic brick look, all of a sudden you've got to strip back everything that's just been plastered on it for years and years and years. And that, from my perspective and from what I'm involved in, that kind of sort of made sense to me, because I try and encourage rather than, I don't know if you're aware of sort of this talent ID stuff that in athletics and in sport, you try and identify kids as young an age as possible that they're going to be the next best thing. And for me, that's just so wrong, because they're trying to identify them against a set of structured moves that they want the kids to have, rather than looking at how they actually do stuff in a natural environment, you know.
Yeah.
Over the weekend when I had my grandson, I'd bought him a Captain America costume when I was in California, because he wants to be Captain America for Halloween here.
Come on, Spider-Man.
Costume. And he was, you know, put it on and he's wearing it. And I can share the video if y'all want to see it. But, so I took him out to, we had this little farm, and I took him out there and we had these baby donkeys, some donkeys. And there was a baby born about a month ago. And so we went out there. So he's wearing his Captain America costume. And we're just walking around amongst the donkeys. And I'm not saying anything. I'm just, you know, catching glimpses of him. And he goes over to one of the donkeys and they kind of like a little skittish and back up from him. And he goes, Mo, he calls me Mo. He goes, Mo, why are they so afraid of me? And I said, well, maybe it's your costume. He had a shield. He had the helmet. He had the whole get up going on. And he goes, he takes his helmet off and he looks at the donkey and he says, donkey, he goes, don't be afraid. I'm not the real Captain America. And it was just like, he saw too that he was being something else, but then there was him. You know, it was just kind of cool. And then the donkey ends up following him around the whole time we're there, you know, nibbling on him. But he did. It's just letting them be, and they figure it out. He figured it out himself. You know, and he knew, and but it is cool.
Yeah. And it's like PE, you know, that this whole idea of structured, we've got to give them something to do, and you know, as a little bit of a straw poll, I've not done this, but I thought you could probably go to a class full of young kids and sort of say, right, okay, for an hour today, we're going to go to the park, and you're going to do whatever you want to do. Climb, you can play, you can roll. Mm. And I bet you every single kid in the class would love it, and they'd go along and they'd just do what they're going to do. But as soon as you say to them, right, we're going to do PE now, and it's this and this and this, a lot of the kids just completely get switched off and the barriers come down. And it seems to me we're just missing a trick with that approach, you know.
Yeah. I just want to say, Sean, I think those kids that you're coaching are really, really lucky to have you. They're really lucky that they've got somebody who can appreciate them and see them for who they are and their potential. I really do.
Thank you. Well, we have a laugh.
Nice. That's great. Thanks, Sean. And should we go next to Simon? Hey, Simon, you're on.
Hello, everybody. Hiya. Hi there. Something Steph said about the airline story brought something to mind, and it was a song in the '80s by a guy called Ian Dury and the Blockheads, and it was called "Reasons to Be Cheerful."
Part one.
Yeah.
as if we need any freaking reason to be cheerful, you know?
Yeah.
Why am I happy, you know? What we get taught, you know? What we get taught, you know? It's in the song. You need a reason to be cheerful. Well, you don't need any reason to be cheerful. and that got me thinking of another song from the 80s by Dire Straits called "Love Over Gold." And that got me thinking about love over thought. And I thought, do you know what? It's always thought over love, isn't it?
Yeah.
But love over thought is like, doesn't that seem a bit? It seems a bit more powerful to me. Mm-hmm. Yeah, love over thought.
Yeah.
Because love is the default, isn't it? If love and happiness and joy and stuff, that's the default. That's always gonna come back. I used to love the metaphor of Michael's metaphor of the cloud going over the sun. But somehow the kind of the sun in front of the cloud, it just somehow seems nicer. It seems rather nicer and more like how it really is. And these metaphors work and then they don't. And I've been getting a bit tied up with metaphors until I've just thought, well, they're just, do you know what? Some metaphors work better and at some stages and some ways.
I love that. I love that. That's brilliant, Simon. That love over thought is really cool. What I saw in what you were saying there, what I saw was, you know, love is the constant. That is truth. That is the one thing that doesn't change. Whereas thought is, by its nature, it's transient. You know, it comes and it goes. It comes and it goes from formless to form, back to the formless. But love, that's the ground we walk on.
Yeah.
That is when we don't get caught up in the thought. That's the platform that we approach life from, and we approach people from, and there's something really, really touching about that. And I think it's just knowing that that's there, knowing that that's who we are, it changes everything. You know, I view the world differently once I understood love over thought. Thank you, Simon.
The other, I don't know whether you had anything to add on that, Maureen.
Well, I thought it was, but that's how, when my thoughts, I was thinking when Steph was just talking too, thoughts come and go. And when I get those icky thoughts, I don't get hung up on it like, why? Why am I thinking this? Why am I feeling that way? I just let it go, because it then it brings you back to that love for yourself, which is love for everything else. And that's a cool way. And really, when you were saying that, I mean, it brought me back to this great teacher that one time said to me, "Maureen, you are no more a realtor than Jesus was a carpenter." And that's true for all of us, you know, whatever title we all give ourselves. And I thought that was pretty cool.
Really cool. Yeah.
Thank you, Simon.
Thank you, Simon.
Thank you.
Thank you, Simon.
And next up, let's go to our friend Jackie. Hey, Jackie.
Hey. I have really, and I've been very immersed in some very involving programs lately, because I did Super Coach Academy and the Infinite Potential course, and have come out of it really, Stephanie was talking about it. It's the already there-ness of things that I don't, how it looks to me now is, and not in a conceptual way, but what I'm really experiencing isn't there, isn't, I don't come and go from that place we're talking about. I don't leave it and then come back to it. I don't have some terrible thoughts and then my terrible thoughts tell me I'm moving in the wrong direction and then I correct my course and, you know, and that may all go on. But I really am having an experience of being in that larger place, and I like, it's noisy and it's quiet at the same time. The quiet is just always there, and it's a context for the noise, and I am suddenly not worried about all my noise, and I don't have to shush up all my noise. And I did not come out of the IPIP this past weekend going gangbusters for all this great stuff. I'm still eating junk food. I still feel like really crummy. I got all upset at work yesterday about something. I thought, well, that was embarrassing. But I'm just not worried about it. I'll see what I need to see when I see it. And yesterday, I've been wanting to start walking again. I haven't done it in a while, but it's dark when I leave in the morning and dark when I come home, and I can't do it during the day. And it's like this problem that when am I going to walk? And yesterday I was at this grocery store that's 5 minutes from my house, and there's this little gym right next door. And I've lived there for over 3 years. The gym has always been there. And I forget about it. And I just thought, oh, I know that's too expensive. I can't afford a gym now. But let's go see what it costs. So anyway, it's dirt cheap, and I joined the gym. Maybe I'll go, maybe I won't go. But it's just a silly gym membership. But there's this, I could see it. I could see it. Ideas are coming. They're there. And this belief I have always had in the scarcity of things, especially the scarcity of love. Oh yeah, I get the universal love, but for me in my life, oh, there's not enough. So I got to hang on to it. And it's like, if I fully engage with someone and I let them see me, they're going to steal my soul or something, because there isn't enough of me and I have to hoard it. It doesn't work that way. You block something somewhere, you kind of block it everywhere, it seems to me. And I finally am getting that that making a poem is like making a sandwich. The creativity and everything just flows, and I get to have whatever stuff I have going on, and we'll see what happens. And there just is a peace in that, because I've always wanted the great things. I want some big dramatic insight and some big dramatic change. And I just am finding this deep appreciation for what look like the little things of life. But life is life is mostly the little things. Life is mostly what we call the little things, how we move through the world. So I don't know what's next, but this has come from, and I have done some involving programs, as I said, but really, I know I'm seeing it because I've stayed actively in this conversation.
Yeah.
And that's all I needed to do. All my figuring out, all my smarts were not what got me here. It's been continuing to look and to listen. And who knows where I'll be at next week. I might be just miserable again. I might be glorious, but it doesn't, there's no place. There's no place to go. Hmm. Just how it looks right now.
That's gorgeous. Gorgeous, Jackie. I love what you were saying about not trying to figure it out. It just seems that you're paying less attention to the noise. And that's how I see it. That's how I see it with me. On a you know, sort of minute by minute, hour by hour level, is that okay? Sometimes I do really get lost in the thought, like the, you know, the flight one. But it just seems to me that without trying, I'm paying much less attention to the noise in my head, and I'm paying more attention to the signal. I'm paying more attention to what I am, not who I am.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that too, Jackie. I mean,
yeah.
I've noticed it's the simple things in life. Just the simple, like even what Simon was saying, like the cloud and the sun. And it's just, I love to look at the clouds. I mean, it's just the tree. It's just the little simple, the person in front of you in line. It's just those connections to the things that we normally don't pay attention to, because we have so much going on in our head. Where am I going to go? What I'm going to do? Who's next? Who's next? And all that just starts falling away. And it's really just being, I'm just thinking about this now. It's really just being present to yourself too, Jackie. I mean, it's the simplicity of it all. I mean, The three P's is that simplicity that scares everybody because it's too simple. And it's just really the gracefulness of life. And my husband said something to me the other day. He goes, why are you giving away everything? I said, what are you talking about? And he goes, well, every day I go back there, and he goes, and you filled up the trash can. I'm like, well, I just open a cabinet. I notice we don't use these things. I'm just getting rid of them. And it's kind of, I guess it's like clearing up the thoughts. It's just clearing out the cupboards too. It's just, oh, we don't need this. So just move it. Keeping it simple. Thank you, Jackie.
Gorgeous. Okay, guys, so let's see. We have time for one more if someone else would like to raise your hand. Or we can just turn it over to our fearless leaders for them to bring us home with a few summing up thoughts or whatever's come up. Why don't you do that, Steph and Maureen? Why don't you talk about whatever's come through for you during the call? You like how I did that? I just put him on the spot.
Yeah, I'm looking up at the sky. So
there's something written on the ceiling.
Yeah,
it's fading.
Oh, my script. Yeah. I've really, really enjoyed this call, and I enjoy them all, but I there's been some really, really beautiful metaphors, and I just really like the idea of knowing that we are everything that we need to be. We don't need to learn anything. We don't need to try to be anything. We don't need to effort to be something that we already are. And I just like the thought that, you know, when we can get quiet enough and we can not try to control stuff so much, and we can trust in the kindness of the design, it really, really, really does make a huge difference. You know, I'm living testimony to that. You know, I used to try and control everything, and now not so much. And I see the world differently, and it's a beautiful life, full of miracles.
Nice.
Yeah, Steph, thank you. Yeah, I was kind of thinking back on the flashlight thing earlier about, and the flashlight really, to me, kind of symbolizes awareness. So if you're caught up in it and you're close up to it, your awareness is smaller. Whereas if you step back, you see more, and that opens up you more, and it just makes you more aware. But it's coming back from IP, I was on the plane watching a movie, and I cried, and I never cry. I don't cry at Steel Magnolias. I didn't cry at Forrest Gump. I mean, I'm just not a crier. But lately, all I do is cry. But it's not a sad cry. It's a happy cry. It's a joyful cry. But I mean, I was bawling on that airplane, and all the times for me to be sitting on the aisle, everybody can see me, and the stewardess is bringing me tissues, and I'm like, I just need to turn this movie off. But it felt good. But it was a sad, happy cry in the movie too. And it was just, and there was no alcohol involved. I was just crying. But I mean, it was so bad afterwards, I had to turn on the Sound of Music to watch it to kind of calm me down. But I've noticed that in a lot of things lately, somebody can just say something and they're just like tears of joy. And I don't care anymore if somebody sees me cry. I mean, I grew up with four brothers and you are not to cry. I've always told you cannot cry. That's a sign of weakness. You know, you have to be strong. But so now, it just feels cool to break down those blocks. You hear me, Rex? Breaking down those walls and knowing it's everything's okay. Everything's okay. Everyone's okay. Even the homeless guy in the corner, he's where he wants to be. If he didn't want to be there, he can pull himself up. We're all where we're supposed to be. And we all see things the way we're supposed to see them. And the way we see it this week won't look the same next week. Hopefully it'll be broader. Not this, but it, just know if it goes back down to this, it expands back out again.
Beautiful.
Air in a balloon.
Thanks so much.
I'm not good with the analogy stuff.
No, you are. You're great. I love the flashlight and the balloon. So guys, I want to invite you again to, if you would like to have a chat, some of you have already messaged me and we've chatted and it's been great. You can message me Sarah, S-A-R-A, at michaelneal.org. And I would love to have a talk and just hear what you're seeing. If you're listening to this recording, it goes for you too. You don't have to post on Facebook or raise your hand on the call. You're welcome to have a conversation privately if you prefer that, or in addition if you like. Okay. So big thank you to Maureen and to Steph. And I'm just going to unmute you all so you can say goodbye. Here you go. Thank you.
Bye. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Bye.